Hi, I'm Matthew Kind. Every Monday, look for a fresh new episode where I'll take you behind the scenes and interview the insiders that are shaping the rapidly evolving cannabis industry. Learn more at cannainsider.com. That's CANNA insider.com. Now here's your program. If your business is serving customers that are cannabis growers, it can be hard to get funding. Today's guest, Liz Wald of Good Earth Organics, is going to walk us through her non-traditional path towards funding. Liz, welcome to Canna Insider.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Give us a sense of geography. Where are you in the world today?
I'm in beautiful Steamboat Springs, Colorado.
Okay. What a lovely place. And what is Good Earth Organics on a high level?
So Good Earth Organics is a manufacturer and distributor of premium certified organic soil and soil amendments, which are nutrients that you can add to the soil that are optimized for cannabis growth.
Okay. And Liz, can you share a bit about your background and journey and how you got into the cannabis space and into Good Earth Organics?
Yeah, sure. So my career really has been in the e-commerce and internet space for about 25 years. And I was really fortunate in my timing. I got out of business school in 1995, and this whole idea of e-commerce and the internet was just starting to, you know, come to life. And I decided to join this little company called AOL at the time.
Oh, wow.
Or actually a consulting firm working for AOL, but they were so small. We might as well have been employees back then. And I just loved being part of an emerging industry. And I went on to be at places like Etsy and then Indiegogo. And, you know, after about 25 years of, you know, participating in this world, I thought, you know, what could I do next that's also kind of emerging and growing and exciting and new and really disrupting things? And cannabis obviously popped right up, especially as someone who generally lives in New York, where the East Coast is just starting to see cannabis come to life now.
Yeah.
I saw, wow, this is emerging just like the internet and e-commerce world was emerging, you know, in the 90s.
Yeah. And, you know, what's kind of the process when people are buying soils? I mean, your target customer, what are they thinking about? What's going through their head when they're evaluating, hey, should I get this soil or that soil? Can you walk us through that?
Sure. You know, I think we sell kind of two major types of customers. One are the very large cultivators, the big growers. And then we also sell to the home growers. And, you know, the big growers, they're really thinking about two things. One is the quality of their crop. Is it a high yielding crop? Is there the what they're trying to achieve at a THC level or a CBD level or a combination or whatever it is? Are they going to get what they need from the inputs that they're using? That's one thing they think about. The other thing they think about is, are we going to pass all the state and local tests that we're going to have to pass in order to sell this crop, right? So if you grow this amazing crop and then you take it to be tested and you fail because of contaminants, that's a disaster, right? So those two factors, like, is it going to be a great product? Is it going to pass all the tests? Are major considerations for a serious cultivator. And so they really think about, you know, plants are a little bit like people. You are what you eat. So whatever you put into the ground is going into the plant, right? And so that's a big consideration for them. For the home grower, I think they're thinking about, you know, depending how sophisticated they are, is like, I want a really good quality soil and I want to see this thing grow, but I probably don't want to have to do a huge amount of work, right? I want to water it. I want to, you know, check on it, but can I buy something that's going to create this great product, but also be pretty simple to use?
So there's kind of a more sophisticated buyer now. They're thinking a lot about the benefits of the soil and all these other considerations. Where do you see that going? I mean, where are we going to be in 3 to 5 years from now in terms of soils and what they can do and what people will be thinking about when before purchasing?
Well, I think, you know, like many crises, lots of innovation comes out of it, right? And I think with this pandemic that we've all been living through for the last year, you know, people have thought a lot about the products that they buy and the things that they eat and the recreation that they do. And things like organic gardening has not seen a boom like this since World War II, right? And so we've got lots of people just really paying attention now that they have time to do so, of kind of what's going into their food. Likewise, in the cannabis industry, we've got people becoming much more sophisticated in what they're able to produce, and regulators becoming much more sophisticated in testing what's in that product. And everybody's concerned about having consistency and safety. So I think we're going to just see increases in all of these trends, more natural and organic products, much more of sort of back to this earth feeling that individual consumers have been doing over the last year. And so the organic, certified organic products that have, you know, pesticides that are made from natural ingredients as opposed to chemicals are the kinds of things that I think are only going to increase in both supply as well as demand.
Yeah. And what's the breakdown of bagged soil purchases versus, let's say, a truck delivery or some other way?
Sure. So Good Earth Organics is based in this beautiful part of Southern Oregon, pretty close to the California border. And this area is really thought of as the Emerald Triangle, or as I like to say, the Napa Valley of weed, because people kind of get that analogy, right? And, you know, we've been there for about 12 years selling to cultivators who are growing large, large businesses growing outdoor. And those customers come to us and buy big truckloads of soil, or have us deliver these huge totes that, you know, weigh 600 pounds or 1,000 pounds of soil, because they have just large volumes, right? But we also bag our soil and sell that to people who just need a couple of bags of soil or maybe a pallet of soil. Traditionally, the bulk of our business has been in this larger format, trucks, totes, bulk soil. As we build our company and look to expand to markets throughout the entire US, we are doing a lot more business in our bagged soil and creating a brand around it, just really building that Good Earth Organics brand. And we're also selling online. And so we, from either our own website or Amazon, people come on and buy bagged soil from a consumer standpoint. So I think we'll see a much bigger, or a much more of a balance between the bulk and the bagged as we grow, and more consumers are interested in, you know, filling their back gardens as well as these home growers.
Okay. It's kind of a difficult thing to move around and ship and do that sort of thing. How do you think about that? Like, hey, I want to reach customers with bags. I want to deliver with trucks. You mentioned pallets. Like, it's a heavy thing to ship. So how does that all work?
Yeah, it is. It is a little bit heavy to ship. It's not hard to ship because it's soil. You know, it doesn't break or anything like that. But it is heavy, and that's one of the main reasons we're looking at geographic expansion. And one of the first markets that we've been to and that we've been selling in for the last about year is Oklahoma. And you know, I know you've had guests on your show talking about what's happening in these states that are really burgeoning. And, you know, Oklahoma has something like 6,000 licensed growers, and they are all really new to growing cannabis. They've only been doing it for a year or two. And they really appreciate the education that comes from a company that's been doing this for a long time. So with that market, we've been bagging up our soil, putting it on pallets, and trucking it to Oklahoma. But our goal is to really have a soil yard in Oklahoma, be able to serve that market directly, not have to ship, you know, truckloads of soil halfway across the country, and then be able to reach the southeastern part of the U.S. from that location as well. So ultimately, we would like to truck less and build more locally. I mean, in a perfect world, we'd have maybe five or six regional areas where we're producing soil from, and then be able to kind of build from there.
They probably get a lot of people from Texas coming up to Oklahoma, I imagine.
They sure do. And Texas, you know, I was looking at the map the other day, and I think there's now 38 states that have some form of legalization passed, and every single bordering state around Texas has a legal market, every single one. So I think the pressure is on the Lone Star State to come over to the green side, as it were.
I didn't ask, but when I was younger, I read a book called The Good Earth by Pearl Buck.
Oh, that was an excellent book.
Yeah, it really was an excellent book. There's few that I read that long ago that leave a lasting impact like that. But is that where the name of the company comes from, Good Earths?
I'd love to say yes, but I don't know that that is true. I think, so the company was started by a former chemist, someone who was in his 60s at the time and decided he was retiring from being a chemist and was living in Cave Junction, in this area where our soil yard is today. And he just believed so much in using natural and organic things to grow. And because he was a chemist, he really understood both the needs of the plants from a nitrogen, potassium, phosphorus standpoint, as well as how you could create the balance in the soil you need from ingredients like seabird guano or bat guano or earthworms or cocoa core or, you know, all the things that go into our soil. There's actually no dirt in any of this soil, right? It's not like someone's going into the backyard, digging it up and putting it in a bag. It's all made from natural organic ingredients that are blended together to kind of get this right chemical balance. So for him, the idea of a good earth was super important. Like, this earth should be good. Like, you could literally eat it. It wouldn't taste great, but it's not going to hurt you, you know?
Right.
And then, of course, organics, our whole focus is on being, you know, certified organic products so that you know everything in there that's going to go into your plant is okay to go into you as well. And it's not going to be synthetic, you know, pesticides and chemicals and contaminants and all that stuff. So to me, I think that's probably where it came from. But next time I talk to Roy, I'll have to ask him for the specific story.
Yeah. You know, there's a handful of soil companies I can think of. How do you stand out? Because you know that your customers are kind of evaluating, like, should I go with Good Earth? Should I go with this other one? And it's like, you want to be top of mind and you also kind of want to fill their exact needs. So how do you make sure you kind of have this unique selling proposition for your prospect?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think the way I think about it is you have to have a very consistent and a product that they can trust over and over, but you can't just tell people, trust us. The fact that we have, you know, 12 years of growing experience with cannabis growers who come to us year after year, give us input, ask for different types of, hey, I'm looking for this kind of result. What would you recommend? Could we try blending these two or three things together? We've had so much time working directly with folks like that, that when we go into a new market, we can say, hey, you know what? We make this great soil, but your market here, you guys really are going to need to grow indoors because there's too much humidity, or your soil, the groundwater, you know, isn't going to work for you, whatever it might be. And then we can say to them, hey, we've got this range of products. We have these soils, but we also have all these amendments, and we can really help you dial in what you actually need. And I think that capability is something that's really hard for another company just like snap their fingers and replicate. Right. So to me, it's about education. It's about quality inputs, but it's also about really having a relationship with the customer and knowing that they can give us feedback and that we'll be able to respond to that in some positive way.
Yeah. I'm sure, you know, repeat buyers is a good indicator of, in terms of, you know, how loyal they are to your brand. Is that something you look at?
Totally. And, you know, the people who've been purchasing from us for a long time in Southern Oregon, I mean, they've been great. Like, they've done some videos for us and they get really excited talking about the soil. I mean, we don't really have to write a script or anything. We're just like, tell us about this. Or like, it's amazing. I just put it in the ground and we get these awesome plants. And, you know, it's really fun to hear this because you know that they mean it and that they're using it year after year after year. And many of them who, you know, these large cannabis cultivators, they also have gardens, you know, and orchards and other things. And they're using the soil for all of that as well. Right. So they truly appreciate it. And, you know, we've got this one video up on our website of a woman named Joy who's holding this radish that looks like an apple. I mean, it's huge, right? And she's like, I grew this in Gaia's gift and it tastes amazing. It's crunchy. It's sweet. It's like, it's incredible, you know? And so those are the kinds of stories that keep us working hard every day.
So you worked at one of the crowdfunding platforms, Indiegogo. What were kind of your key learnings or takeaways from how to successfully do a crowdfunding when you were there?
Yeah. So at the end of the day, what I really learned is that crowdfunding is really, it's marketing more than it is finance, right? Okay. It's all about how do you tell your story in a compelling way so people want to support you. So people want to support the company. So people want to support the vision. And, you know, it's not about trying to necessarily just say, hey, you know, give us your money and we're going to make this great product and you're going to be happy. It's support the vision of this company, support the bigger idea of what does organic mean? What does great soil mean? You know, how can you're going to raise some money and we're going to hopefully give you a tremendous return, but it has to be more than that for people to really buy in. And so it's really about how do you market it and how do you tell your story? And I think that was probably the biggest takeaway from my time there is to focus on that. And the fundraising part of it will come. If you focus on the relationship with the person who's going to fund you, they will actually give you the money. But if you just focus on the money, it's much harder.
Yeah. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong here. It's like most of the ways that people get eyeballs on their Indiegogo campaign is A, if you're on the Indiegogo email list and you see it that way, but then everybody else, the only way they find out about it is if it's shared via someone that's on that list or who's shared from someone else. So the sharing component, like, do you want to embed something that makes you want to share it?
Absolutely. And, you know, email, social media, all of these places of please tell people why you wanted to support this and get your friends to do it. And I always use this analogy of a restaurant, right? You can hear about an amazing new restaurant that's opening in your neighborhood and this top chef is going to be there and she's been written up in 15 articles and it's awesome. And if you go down to go to that restaurant and there's no one in that restaurant, you won't go in, despite how amazing it is supposed to be. Like, you want to see other people there, right? Yeah. If you go down there and there's a line, you're like, I got to go to this restaurant, right? And so it's like, that's exactly the same thing in crowdfunding. Like, if you show up at a page and, you know, they've raised $1, that's not so great. If they've raised $1 million, but it's only from one person, that's also not so great. You want to see they've raised $1 million and there's hundreds of people that are supporting this. Like, oh, this is something that I need to learn more about. There's other people who believe in this thing, right? And that's really the key. So I always talk about that sort of crowded restaurant analogy. You know, if you can run a campaign successfully, you're going to have lots of people who are also going to want to tell their friends about it. And you'll have hundreds, if not thousands of supporters. And you know, I'd rather get 10,000 people to give me $100 than, you know, the reverse, because you want to have lots and lots and lots of people spreading the word.
Yeah. I'm not ashamed to admit that in many cities that I've walked around in, I get in a line. If I smell something good and I see people in a long line, sometimes I'll just get in a line. I don't even know what the food is or anything, but I'm just like, I'm going to see what's happening here because it's something special.
Exactly.
And not disappointed when I find out.
Exactly. And, you know, crowdfunding is also, there's a couple of kinds. Like, we're raising capital for Good Earth Organics using equity crowdfunding, right? Which is, you know, where you actually get shares in the company. And other kinds of crowdfunding is you're purchasing an item in advance, or, you know, you're getting rights to go to a film before other people see it, that kind of thing. But with equity crowdfunding, you actually get a little bit of ownership in the company. And I think one of the things that's really cool about the way we're doing it is we're opening that to everyone. You don't have to be an accredited investor. It's a pretty small initial investment. I think the minimum is $1,000. So we're trying to make this really open to lots and lots and lots of people, not just a certain group of people that can do sort of these private investment type opportunities.
Yeah. So it formerly, this all used to be done to only accredited investors, essentially people that I think have over $1 million net worth outside of real estate or make over $300,000 or $350,000 2 years in a row. I think it's something like that.
Yeah.
Can you explain what the change was in the law that allows the ability to buy shares in the company?
Sure. Well, there were some changes in crowdfunding came along with Obama. He brought in this idea of being able to open this crowdfunding to regular everyday investors. And it took a while for all the laws to kind of kick in. And there's a few different laws out there. There's Regulation A, there's Regulation D, there's Regulation CF. But essentially, it was a way for the SEC to say, we're gonna create a structure that allows a company like the size of Good Earth Organics that has been around for a while and has audited numbers, but to say, hey, you know what? We're going to do this public offering without using a big investment bank, without spending all this money on a roadshow, without limiting it to only a certain type of investor. And we're going to make that available to lots and lots and lots of people. And what the government and the SEC said is you can raise up to $10 million or up to $20 million or up to $50 million, depending on what regulation you choose. So we're doing Regulation A, and we're looking to raise up to $10 million. We could go as high as 20 under the law, but it's essentially a way for regular people to say, hey, the SEC has looked at this company enough to say they can go ahead and make an offering, and they've got financials that I can read and look at. It's not like they can just make up what they want and just put it out there. So there's been some checks and balances, but we can open it to the regular everyday person.
Okay. And some of your insights from working at Indiegogo, how did you apply them to your crowdfunding campaign?
Well, the first thing I did was redo our video. So okay. I was like, you know, we need to make an emotional attachment to soil, right? Like we need people to understand why soil is important and why it's particularly important in cannabis. And, you know, having a bunch of executives talking about the financial returns isn't going to do that. So we really rethought our video. And the video is a really important thing for investors or anybody of any kind of crowdfunding campaign, because it gets to the heart very quickly of what the company is about and what the product is about. And so we show our soil yard, we show actual cultivations, we show people, you know, with their hands in the soil. And it's a great reflection of the culture and the values of the company. And then we can go from there to talk about, hey, this industry is growing 20% a year, year after year. Organic soil is, you know, going to be a $3 billion market doubling from today. All those kinds of things. But the first and most important thing was grab that initial, like, emotional attachment. So that was kind of the first thing I did. And then everything else was pretty easy because we have a great product that's easy to explain to people. It's not complicated. This is really good soil. Put your plants in it and they're going to grow and be great. You know, it's not a complicated technology product or something.
Yeah.
And then connect with the people. So, you know, if you can talk about the fact that, hey, the people that run this company day to day, you know, they know how to grow cannabis. They've been doing this for years. They're part of the local community. You can trust that they know what they're doing. And I think that's the other big piece is, like, are the people behind the company ones that you can believe in? So if you can make that emotional attachment, connect to the people, and then have an actually great product in a booming market, you know, those three things should come together to be successful.
So what will the capital go into that you raise? What do you use it for?
So we're going to have a couple of different things. One of the things I've mentioned earlier was we want to do geographic expansion.
Okay.
Right? So we want to be able to either go and build our own soil yard in a location or find a small company like Good Earth Organics that's been around for, you know, 5 or 10 years serving a local market. And we can come in and use the capital that we've raised to acquire that company and and build from what they've started to develop more products and the like. We are also potentially interested in purchasing other amendments or soils, brands that we think would fit in with the Good Earth brand, as well as do a lot of our own product development. And a big piece of our approach is after we raise this capital, we're going to do a direct listing on an OTC market, which means those shares are going to be public quickly. And there's going to be liquidity for the investors, but it's also going to give us, we hope, a chance to use our stock price to be able to do some of these acquisitions and expand quite rapidly. Rather than trying to do it, you know, one or two sites every couple of years, we want to be able to knock out a few every year, that kind of thing.
One of the things I like to ask business owners and executives that deal in physical goods and have staff as opposed to something like software, do you see inflation at all in your cost of goods or in, you know, taxes going up or healthcare or just any of your inputs? Because we see kind of like a, you know, they say it's around 2% CPI, but, you know, that's not evenly distributed. So do you see kind of input costs going up? And I imagine they would be going up for your, you know, a lot of people, not just Good Earth Organics, but other companies in the space.
Certainly these kinds of costs are ones that we, you know, are trying to manage the best that we can at all times. I think one of the reasons people say, well, hey, can you use your soil for other products like tomatoes? And I'm like, absolutely, you sure can. The good thing about cannabis is that the wholesale price for a pound of cannabis is anywhere from, you know, $800 to $4,000, right? So the good news for us is we might be in a business that has to deal with that 2% inflation, but our industry is growing 20 to 25% year over year, right? For the foreseeable 5 years, at least, if not 10 at that rate, right? So the upside opportunity in our market is 10 times the expected, you know, increase in cost. So I think we're in a very much a beginning of an exploding market with loads of share to be captured. And I think from that perspective, all we're really thinking about is growth, because we know we'll be able to do that profitably with the right strategy and the right capital behind us to kind of be able to execute on these things right now and make ourselves in a good position for the future.
It's so much more fun being in a category that's growing so much, this green wave, isn't it, Liz?
It's absolutely the case. No doubt about it.
Well, I'd like to turn to some personal development questions to help the audience get a better understanding of who you are personally. With that, is there a book that's had a big impact on your life or your way of thinking that you'd like to share?
So I was thinking about this question about these kinds of, you know, impacts. And I came to the cannabis industry, you know, kind of like sort of out of the blue, as it were. And so for me, when I think about what really impacted me from this perspective, I read a couple of books that really helped me understand the cannabis industry and the soil industry. And, you know, even more so than the business books that I've read, these have really had an impact now. And I think anyone who's looking at the cannabis industry, one book I'd really recommend anybody reads, whether they're a consumer or on the business side, is Steve D'Angelo's book, The Cannabis Manifesto. Sure. Because I think I'm sure you know the book well, but it's such a great background, not just on the benefits of the plant, of which he really details amazingly well, but he also takes the reader through the social justice issues and kind of how we got to where we are today and why the market is the way it is. And he's a great writer. So it's just a, I thought, great foundational book for anyone who's looking to sort of understand the space a little bit better. So that was one. And then the other book I read, you know, when I joined Good Earth Organics, I really wanted to understand this idea of, you know, living soil. Like, what does that mean? And so I read this book called Teeming with Microbes. And it's the Organic Gardener's Guide to the Soil Food Web. And this idea that soil is a food web is incredible to me, right? And the book is sort of the first half of the book, you feel like you're back in high school biology or college biology class, like it is detailed. But the back half of the book, it's like once you get through the reminding yourself of the fundamental biology, the back half is all about how you use that in practice and that we can grow amazing plants or even a beautiful green lawn with all natural products. And I remember, you know, at one point in the book, they talk about an old growth forest. And they're like, hey, you know what? An old growth forest doesn't have any external pesticides or chemicals or anything. Like Mother Nature has found the perfect balance of everything that you need. And I felt like that book really helped me really understand the industry and what this means to have sort of this living soil and how important it is for our planet that we get back to this kind of growing and away from, you know, so many of the more chemical things that are out there.
What's the most interesting thing going on in your field besides what you're doing there at Good Earth?
Well, as someone who's living on the East Coast a lot of the time, I think the most interesting thing is watching the pace of legalization potential happening. And it's also at the federal level, you know, if we could get the SAFE banking through and whatnot, I think we're going to see dominoes fall so quickly. So it's really interesting to be there and, you know, watch a state like New Jersey legalize and then across the river have, you know, New York scrambling like, okay, we got to get this done and we got to get it done now. So that's been really fun to see.
What's one thought you have that most people would disagree with you on?
So I'm going to stick with New York on this one. I think a lot of people think the pandemic is just going to, you know, wipe out New York for the next several years. And I have a little more faith in New Yorkers than that. You know, I think that the creativity and entrepreneurial spirit of people in New York are going to find ways to bring this city back quickly. And I actually think cannabis has a big role to play in that. You know, I think the tax base is going to help us get the legalization happen quickly, but there's such an array of different industries from, you know, creative to pharmaceutical to restaurant to beverage that I think we're going to see some amazing companies come out of this and they're going to come out of it in New York.
Huh, interesting. Well, Liz, as we close, can you tell growers how they can find out more about your soil and also about your Seed Invest crowdfunding campaign?
Sure thing. So the best way to find out about our soil is to go to goodearthorganics.com and you can see products there. And also you can find out how to contact us if you're a wholesale buyer and you're interested in placing some larger orders. So goodearthorganics.com for that. And for those who might be interested in learning more about investing, I encourage you to go to seedinvest.com/goodearthorganics. And of course, you can also link there from our own website. But you'll see that it's $1.65 a share and open to everyone and just a $1,000 minimum investment.
Great. Thanks so much for coming on, Liz. We really appreciate it. You're in a great business. I think this is going to help heal the planet. And best of luck to you.
Thank you so much, Matthew. I really enjoyed it.
If you enjoyed the show today, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever app you might be using to listen to the show. Every 5-star review helps us to bring the best guest to you. Learn more at cannainsider.com/iTunes. What are the 5 disruptive trends that will impact the cannabis industry in the next 5 years? Find out with your free report at cannainsider.com/trends. Have a suggestion for an awesome guest on Canna Insider? Simply send us an email at feedback@cannainsider.com. We'd love to hear from you. Please do not take any information from Canna Insider or its guests as medical advice. Contact your licensed physician before taking cannabis or using it for medical treatments.
Promotional consideration may be provided by select guests, advertisers, or companies featured in Canna Insider.
Lastly, the host or guests on Canna Insider may or may not invest in the companies or entrepreneurs profiled on the show. please consult your licensed financial advisor before making any investment decisions.
Final disclosure to see if you're still paying attention. This little whistle jingle you're listening to will get stuck in your head for the rest of the day. Thanks for listening, and look for another Canada Insider episode soon. Take care. Bye-bye.